Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is July 3rd, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is, I'll Melt With You, the Targeted Temperature Trial. And I have a guest skeptic, and who better to talk about a Swedish paper than a Swede herself. I've got Dr. Katrin Herska. Welcome back to the SGEM, Katrin.
Thank you. So happy to be back.
And what's really cool about this is we are recording this in person. This is not some virtual Skype call podcast. We're actually sitting in my home recording this podcast on July 3rd. So, Katrin, what are you doing in North America?
Well, I'm here to visit you, of course. You're my best, my Twitter BFF.
Is there such a thing as a Twitter BFF?
Obviously, the one.
Oh, that's so nice. So we're going to talk about that TTM trial, and there's been a lot of discussion on the internet and on the FOMED world about the TTM trial. And I wanted to get this podcast in season number two, to ensure that we are still trying to cut that knowledge translation window from 10 years down to 1 year. And so this study that we're going to go through, of course, was published in 2013. But before we get to the actual reference, let's give a case scenario to frame the conversation. You have a 72-year-old man, and he has a witnessed arrest here in Goderich at the beach. Bystander CPR is started, and he is shocked out of V-fib by EMS, but he does not regain consciousness. And we know from the episode 54 that cooling in the field does not improve survival. However, his temperature on arrival to the emergency department, because the lake was a little cool, is 36 degrees Celsius. So what's the question of the podcast, Katrin?
The question is, does cooling to a target temperature of 33 degrees Celsius improve survival to hospital discharge and neurological outcome in unconscious survivors of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest of presumed cardiac cause?
The background to this, of course, is therapeutic hypothermia post-cardiac arrest has gotten a great deal of attention over the last decade. And it started with these two randomized control trials showing that hypothermia was neuroprotective. One trial of just under 300 patients in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2002 used cooling air mattresses to demonstrate good outcome at 6 months, and it was 55% versus 39%. There was a smaller Australian study with 77 patients, also published in the New England Journal in 2002, showing good outcome at time of hospital discharge. And David Newman, calculated the NNT of 6 for mild therapeutic hypothermia for neuroprotection following cardiopulmonary resuscitation. The Cochrane collaboration got in on this when they updated their review on hypothermia for neuroprotection in adults after CPR, and this was in 2012. They concluded, quote, conventional cooling methods to induce mild therapeutic hypothermia seems to improve survival and neurological outcome after cardiac arrest. Our review supports the current best practices as recommended by the International Resuscitation Guidelines. End of quote. The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, of course, was, say it with me, skeptical. And we covered in episode number 21, Ice Ice Baby, the paper looking at cooling patients before they arrive to the emergency department. In other words, cooling them in the fields. And this was done by Bernard et al. And it was called the induction of therapeutic hypothermia by paramedics after resuscitation from out-of-hospital ventricular fibrillation cardiac arrest, a randomized control trial. And the question of that study was whether the pre-hospital therapeutic hypothermia improves patient outcome after successful resuscitation. The study had 234 patients and used large volumes of ice-cold Ringer's lactate. The primary outcome was about 50% of patients survived to functional hospital discharge, but there was no benefit to cooling. And then, of course, in this season, SGEM 54, we covered the larger pre-hospital cooling paper by Kim et al. In JAMA. And the bottom line from that one was, scoop and run after cardiac arrest with no cooling in the field required. But now we've got the patient, Katrin, to the hospital. You know, many of the patients I see, of course, I work in smaller community hospitals. We're not doing that cooling because we don't have the ICU and the resuscitation in-house. And so my main focus was, should I be cooling these people in the field for long transportation times? But how about once they've arrived to that definitive destination? You know, what's happened in the last 10 years is all these cooling protocols have started. So the question we really want to know is, should we be cooling these people once the resuscitation part is over and they're in the ICU? So what's the reference for today's podcast?
The reference is the targeted temperature management at 33 degrees versus 36 degrees after cardiac arrest from the New England Journal of Medicine 2013 by Niklas Nielsen et al.
Is that a Swedish name?
That's a Danish name, but I think he's Swedish at heart. He works at a smaller hospital in the south of Sweden.
So let's go through the PICO, because it was a fairly large trial here. What was the population they were looking at?
They screened more than 1,400 patients and managed to come up with 939 patients from 36 different intensive care units in Europe and Australia, who all had out-of-hospital cardiac arrest with more than 20 consecutive minutes of spontaneous circulation after resuscitation.
And what was the intervention they were looking at?
Well, they were comparing two treatments, either cooling the patients to 33 degrees Celsius or maintaining normothermia at 36 degrees for 36 hours, and then allowing the temperature to rise up to 37.5, but no more than that for 72 hours post-arrest.
So really, they were looking at just two different temperatures, the 36 degrees versus the 33 degrees. What did you put down for the control or the comparison?
I mean, it depends on what you see as standard of care, but since the recommendations from ILCOR is that patients should have induced hypothermia down to 32 to 34 degrees after cardiac arrest, I guess that is the standard treatment.
Yeah, so I guess the control would be the 33 degrees for the cooling, because that's the standard recommendation currently. And then the intervention would be, is 36 degrees Celsius still all right?
Yeah.
So, Katrin, what was the primary and secondary outcomes for this TTM trial?
Okay, so the primary outcome was mortality at the end of the trial. And they also had a few secondary outcomes, which were a mortality at 180 days. And also, they looked at these two different scales, the cerebral performance category of 3 to 5, or a modified ranking scale of 4 to 6, also at 180 days.
And I'll throw up those two scales in the blog so people can be familiar with them when they're reading through this review.
Yeah, so basically they were looking at poor neurological outcome.
Yeah, poor neurological outcome. I mean, a 6 on the Rankin score? I mean, that's dead. I think that's no neurologic outcome. Not poor.
Yeah, well, maybe not the worst of outcomes.
Would you rather be a 5 or a 6?
I'd rather be a 5. Or you, I'd rather be a 6.
No. I think I'd rather be a 6. I mean, 5 is my favorite number,
yeah,
but not when it comes to a modified Rankin score.
I think I'll go 1, 2, 6.
Yeah, 1, 2, 6? And skip the 3, 4, and 5?
Yeah, I can do without those.
So the author's conclusion to the TTM trial was, quote, "In conclusion, our trial does not provide evidence that targeting a body temperature of 33 degrees Celsius confers any benefit for unconscious patients admitted to the hospital after out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, as compared with a targeting a body temperature of 36 degrees Celsius," end of quote. So, Katrin, let's quickly go through the quality checklist for randomized control trials. And there's 11 questions that we ask. And the first one is, was the study population focused on patients in the emergency department?
Well, they focus on out-of-hospital cardiac arrest only, but the ED is not really mentioned in the trial. And in Sweden, for example, like patients with a STEMI will go straight to cath lab. So it is possible that some of these patients went straight to the ICU and didn't pass the emergency department.
Oh, I see that. So in a different system, you may bypass the emergency department in Sweden, whereas in North America, mainly these people would be presenting to the emerge and not going directly to the ICU. At least in my practice environments, that would be the case. How about question 2? The patients were randomized adequately?
Yes, they were.
Was the randomization concealed?
Yes, it was.
And were the patients analyzed into the groups they were randomized?
Yes, this was an intention to treat study.
And did they recruit patients consecutively?
They did. They screened them consecutively, and they recruited all the eligible patients, I guess.
And when they looked at the patient groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes, they were.
And question number 7, were all participants unaware of which group they were allocated?
No.
No. Could you expand on the no?
Well, it's very difficult for the nurses and doctors caring for the patients not to notice what temperature they're having.
So, you mean like they'd feel a chill? or is actually actively looking at the targeted temperature and dialing things up and down?
Yeah, I mean, they have to do that. They have to know. We always look at the temperature of the patient. So the physicians and the nurses caring for the patients were aware, but the physicians performing neurologic prognostications or assessing the outcomes were unaware.
So in other words, they blinded the statisticians and the administrators and the authors about which group the patients were allocated?
Yeah, and patients were actually blinded too.
Because they were unconscious?
Yeah, and their family members, they only knew that they were taking part in the study, but they didn't know which group they had been assigned to.
Oh, I see what you mean. So the when you say the patients, it's the family members who were consenting and being their power of healthcare weren't aware of which group they were assigned to. They were just aware that they were registered into this trial.
Yeah, and the patients afterwards.
Were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
And was follow-up complete at least 80% for both groups?
Yeah, they had 100% follow-up.
100% follow-up on almost 1,000 patients. That's pretty remarkable. Is that a testament to the study design or the system where these studies were conducted? Because 100% is pretty phenomenal.
Well, it would be very easy to get 100% follow-up on mortality in Sweden.
Why?
Because everybody is registered somewhere and we can easily see who died. It has to be reported to the authorities within 3 days, so that's very easy to follow up on.
Question 10, all patient important outcomes were considered.
Yes. I mean, mortality is the most relevant outcome, I guess, but also the neurological function. I don't know. What do you think is the best way to follow up on neurological outcomes?
Well, when they did the modified Rankin score and they lumped 0 to 3 and 4, 5, and 6 together, so they had a dichotomous outcome. Either you were a 3 or under or a 4 and over. And we can argue about why you would pick a 2 versus a 3, but what I was impressed with is that they didn't do a modified Rankin scale ordinal analysis like we've been seeing in some of the trials.
I put that down too. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that.
Because most of the stroke trials look at modified Rankin score of 0 to 2, where in this trial they looked at 0 to 3.
I think they were actually comparing it to the earlier studies on hypothermia where they used the same groups.
So was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, there was no effect.
Well, let's go through the key results because that leads right into it. What were the key results from this study? What was the primary outcome?
The primary outcome was mortality, and there was no difference there.
And what about the secondary outcomes that you had mentioned earlier?
No, there was no difference there either.
So there was no difference both in mortality and all their secondary outcomes between 33 degrees Celsius and 36 degrees Celsius in this TTM trial.
No, there wasn't even a trend.
So what do we say for commentary then? What are your thoughts then on this paper?
Well, what's interesting about this paper is that it excluded very few patients. They really tried to include everyone who showed up in the emergency department with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, regardless of initial rhythm. So these are the patients that we see.
Yeah, so one of the things you wanted to mention is that they had 36 intensive care units from Europe and Australia. What do you think that does for external validity and application to a variety of practice patterns and locations?
Yeah, of course it makes it more relevant because there are smaller hospitals and university hospitals who all took part in this trial. And they also used different methods for cooling, and they couldn't see any difference between the different sites.
So it wasn't actually the method of cooling, it was the fact that you got the person to that cooler temperature of 33 degrees versus 36 degrees. So the method of getting them cool didn't seem to impact on the outcomes?
No, it didn't.
And then we had talked earlier a bit about the risk of bias because of the inability to blind the treating healthcare providers. You didn't think it would unlikely to affect their primary outcome of mortality. Why is that?
In this type of study, there could be a problem actually with that bias, since treatment was terminated after 72 hours for a lot of patients. So they had a predefined protocol for when care was terminated to avoid that bias to allow them to affect mortality.
So you don't think that the blinding issue played a big role in mortality then?
No, I guess not.
How would you compare our critical appraisal conclusions to the author's conclusions, which, of course, the author's conclusion was that the trial did not provide evidence of a targeted body temperature of 33 degrees Celsius was better than 36 degrees Celsius?
Well, it's difficult not to agree with that conclusion, so I do agree with the authors.
Then the bottom line would have to be there is no difference between a targeted temperature of 33 degrees Celsius compared to 36 degrees Celsius for survival of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. When we reflect back on the case resolution to this 72-year-old man with the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest who arrived at 36 degrees Celsius, he was actively cooled to maintain this temperature, but was not cooled further to 33 degrees Celsius in your setting. And you plan to check in on him in the ICU on your next shift. So when it comes to applying this information clinically, I think I will start to cool patients who come in with this clinical scenario to 36 degrees and then admit them to the ICU for further management based on our own local protocols. But Katrin, what are you going to tell the wife of this 72-year-old man who comes in and asks, how's my husband doing?
So I'm going to tell her that her husband had a cardiac arrest, but we were able to bring him back, but that he's still unconscious. That we're going to cool him to improve his chances of survival and a good neurological outcome.
There were several other foamers out there that commented on the TTM trial this year. They included the Intensive Care Network, St. Emlyn's, and EM Crit, among others. I'll throw up a list of other foamers out there for further follow-up reading. But we've got to get to the Keener contest to end this podcast. So the Keener contest winner from last week was Dr. Neil Detani from Toronto, and he knew that cocaine was the first local anesthetic isolated from a plant source. So congratulations, Neil. For this week's Keener contest, I turn to my Swedish skeptical guest.
Okay, so this week's Keener contest question is, in December 2013, the ILCOR, the International Liaison Committee on Resuscitation, they put out a statement on targeted temperature management following cardiac arrest. What were their recommendations?
So if you know the answer to this Keener contest question, send me an email, thesgem@gmail.com, and put Keener in the subject line, and the first one to correctly answer this question will receive a cool skeptical prize. But before we go, we've got a couple of upcoming conferences to announce. The first one I want to mention is Quebec Beam, or QBeam, which will be held in the beautiful city of Quebec, September 29th and 30th. So save that date. But tell me about Eurobeam, because you're in charge of that.
Yeah, Eurobeam is going to be a true foamy event, since Prague is the capital of beer, actually.
What is the date for Eurobeam in Prague?
It's December 5th to 6th.
And it's been great having you in person, live, recording this episode, one of the last episodes of the SGEM this season. So could you give the Skeptic's Guide tagline before we leave the podcast?
Okay, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.
I'll stop the world.